Good afternoon, folks. This is John Johnson. Radio Edge Talk is still at the e-assessment conference in Dundee University. I think the conference is drawing to a close soon with the final keynote, and I'm joined now by Martin Hoxie of Alt, who I've just been to a presentation of Martin's at the Open Badges, which I enjoyed thoroughly, and Jenny Crow, who is a e-learning development in Dundee.
In University of the West of Scotland.
The West of Scotland. Got that wrong way around. We're hoping to be joined by Natalie Lafferty too, who is an e-learning development officer, I think, in Dundee. And we just want to kind of think about what's been about so far, what have you enjoyed, what's been interesting to you. Jenny, do you want to...
I think, first of all, for me, going to these conferences is really excellent for meeting new people, meeting peers, to really talk about how they're using learned technology in their institution. I think sometimes it's difficult with pressures of what you have going on to get that time and space to talk to colleagues, to also learn what other people are doing, sharing practice, but also learning what works for them, what things they've found that have been challenging. I think it's quite helpful as well to have the kind of time and space to think about things like feedback, how to do that better for students, how to improve peer learning. I think that's been some of the themes that I've been thinking about today, which have been quite helpful.
And I mean, you started off, assessment was kind of down the line when you started talking.
Yeah, but I think it all links into assessment, so one of the key things about assessment is thinking about how students then reflect on that assessment, and that's a lot to do with feedback. And peer learning is how they can assess each other in a lot of ways and provide feedback, so then that hopefully that leads into further assessment as well. So thinking about those links and how to do that better, so that's how it links into assessment.
Thanks, Martin.
Kind of following on from that, I was in a session by Derek Jones at the Open University, who's looking at, you know, a particular aspect of formative feedback or feedback, and it was quite interesting that that some of the work he was doing was the use of audio feedback, which is something I've been aware of for a while. And, in particular, and Derek himself, you know, said that the data needs to be looked into more closely. But they had two groups. They had a group who were getting text feedback as they had been for a long time, and another group where they were experimenting not just with audio feedback but a feedback pro forma sheet. What was really interesting for me was that for those students who were getting the audio feedback and this new feedback pro forma, the pro forma feedback seemed to be doing a lot better in terms of students engaging with it, students understanding it, than the audio feedback. And I think events like this are really useful to come to and see those kind of nuances that you unless you went off and did this yourself, that you would never get. And I think it it underlines that whilst we are looking at e-assessment, sometimes the simplest technologies of just getting a pro forma sheet right can often outperform potentially something like audio feedback. But there's obviously lots of nuances, and I'm sure Derek's going to be digging into what's going on there more.
I've had a wee chat with Derek earlier on, and kind of from my point of view, and as a primary school teacher, when we started looking at formative assessment, which is probably about 10 years ago now, and started sort of trying to build in formative assessment more formally into our practice, one of the big influencers was Dylan Williams. Mm. And one of the things he says, no matter how much formative assessment you put in a piece of work to a child, if you put summative assessment at the bottom, they skip past all the formative stuff, because what they want to do is, how well did I do? So maybe, and this is me defending audio feedback, because audio is maybe, if you didn't give them the pro forma at the end, they might not like it so much.
Yeah.
But it might force learning to happen, and that I don't know. I'm just wondering if that's.
I tweeted out at the time from Derek's session that this was something very similar. I saw implemented at University of Strathclyde, where they were using feedback pro forma, and the way it was designed was actually the pro forma was used formatively, so students were asked to submit an early version of their work, and I think from memory they were asked to grade their own work against the pro forma, and so then they were given feedback of, you know, the current state of their work against a pro forma. So there's a number of things there in terms of, you know, students are getting a clarification of the criteria, because they, in their own mind, they're making explicit how they think they've done against the criteria, and then they're getting feedback against that themselves before they then go off and do their final submission. So I think you're right, you know, looking at these nuances of when you're providing feedback is very important, and I think it sometimes can get missed in terms, you know, you start creating timelines of stuff, but thinking about, you know, different effects or principles that you can apply to that, and that work was part of the REAP project, which was a couple of years ago now, but thankfully all the resources that they used are still there.
Yeah, I think when you provide feedback is really critical to students, because I've been quite interested in learning about the TESTA project, and they've done a lot of research into at what points do students really value feedback for assessment, and quite often what they found is pretty much immediately after the assessment has been completed, 3 weeks down the line, they find it less valuable, which is quite a challenge for tutors when they spend 3 weeks marking, and if you have 200 students in your class, it's quite a challenge about how to provide that instant feedback that students really look for.
That's again why I would be interested in audio, because you can talk a lot faster than you can write, and you're putting the onus on the listener rather than the teacher, I guess. So if you've got 200 students, they've all got to spend maybe slightly longer, because you can't listen as fast as you can read, but you get to spend slightly shorter. Jenny, are you involved? You're involved in the development of e-learning courses. Could you just sort of expand that a wee bit for me?
Okay, so my role is I advise and support learning, teaching and assessment as part for the university. So it's quite a varied role. So yes, I do build learning for students, but a lot of my role involves advising tutors about which type of technology, advising them about different assessment methods, about pedagogy. So it's kind of quite varied role, but I suppose keeping up to date on different technologies is really important, so you can inform tutors at the university about what would be the best solution for their different types of module, because say for a third year or a level 9, you would maybe use quite a different assessment technique to say someone at first year or level 7. So it's kind of knowing about all these different technologies. So yeah, I was really interested. I went to just a presentation on exam online, so it was really interesting to see how that works in practice. Yes, and because they're running quite large exams and students are completing essay-based exams fully online, including drawn diagrams, which is often a problem for electronic assessment, is the handwritten elements, particularly for maths and subjects like that, who are, in my experience, a little bit against learning technology because it doesn't quite meet their needs of being able to draw graphs and write equations, that kind of functionality.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose I was at the doctor's a wee while ago, and they were looking at, I think, a brain scan or something like that. But what the doctor had, quite a lot of the notes he was getting back from the hospital were photographs or scans of handwritten notes, and that was plugged into my records, and I was just thinking, how appalling is that? You know, we're relying on him bringing up a JPEG of somebody else's writing and having to read it instead of this being in text. So I suppose
that's interesting, but I think the other alternative, whether it's a big file that you couldn't access from anywhere, I think a photo is quite a unique solution for that. I mean, there's points about accessibility and things like that, that for handwritten notes that maybe not the best idea for that. But I suppose being able to access anyway, also for security as well, because if a handwritten note is lost or a photograph's lost, then that's quite, it's pretty much impossible in some cases to be able to retrieve that. So
a friend of mine's a maths teacher in high school. What he does, he marks his pupils' work with his mobile phone, videoing their work. So he actually sort of videos his hand working over. So he gets around the, yeah, it's quite quick, but you also, you can see there working in those squiggly things that maths folk do and stuff like that, which is important. We've just been joined, people, by Natalie Lafferty, am I getting the name
right? That's right, yes.
Lafferty, yeah, I'm trying to get more of my handwriting, who is in the same sort of field as Jenny, I believe, in the University of Dundee. You're learning design.
She's a high agent.
I'm the e-learning lead for medicine, dentistry and nursing.
Right.
Yeah.
Brilliant, thanks very much. And all we've been just doing is talking over one or two of the things that stood out today or been interesting. I just wonder from yourself,
I guess for me, something resonated with me, this one was which Peter was talking about, and I think the whole thing of students as producers, and I think being a bit more creative about how we assess our students, and certainly at the medical school here, we now for a number of years have, particularly in the dermatology clinical attachment with our fourth year students, have been getting students to work in small groups and developing a learning resource. And initially that was an interactive learning resource using something like Articulate. We've looked at using WordPress to develop a kind of patient case. But more recently, we've been getting the students to create a short 5-minute videos relating to a topic which may come up in their clinical examinations at the end of the year. And I think what's been really interesting is that when you first sort of say to the students, this is what you're going to do, it's like groans around the room. But I think there's been one student while we're doing this video project that said it's been a waste of time, but everybody else has said it's been the best piece of teamwork they've done. But also, developing that video and having to understand the topic, they've actually had to learn it in much more detail than if they were just writing an essay. And it's also the fact that they feel they're leaving a legacy for the generation coming behind them. If they write an essay, you know, the assessor reads it and it never sees the light of day again. So there's that sense of, one, that they're actually learning and it's actually fun. And they're also, you know, developing an open educational resource which can be used by the wider community. So
I was talking to some colleagues recently about this. We both have children and we've been hit by the loom band craze, and these little rubber bands that you can weave. And so my daughter brought them home, and I have not a first idea about loom bands or weaving. First thing I did was go onto YouTube, and this was the exact same thing she, you know, her kids are doing. They're going onto YouTube, finding these tutorials. So it's really, I think we've perhaps got a generation coming through where this is their natural response to something is, you know, well, let's go and look for the video of it. And so it's great to hear students producing videos, and I think that, you know, does give them the opportunity to really think about what they know and concepts.
That's right.
At the same time, share it with other people that might be struggling with those concepts.
Yeah. So I think it's also maybe counteracting this, you know, I think it's not so much an issue in Scotland except for maybe the rest of UK students who are paying £9,000 a year, but certainly the rest of the UK, you know, there's this notion of now student as the consumer, and it's actually the big debate around higher education and actually what are universities for, and actually, you know, it used to be that it was about developing scholarship and problem solving, lots of things. So again, I think it's a way of actually getting beyond just that recall of knowledge of being able to regurgitate, you know, what you read in some textbook or what you read online, some kind of guideline.
I wonder too, I mean, my background's in primary education, primary school teacher, and that sort of make a video explaining something is an activity that has begun for a few years now in primary schools, and I wonder if that will carry through. And also the idea, Martin, you talk about YouTube. I quite often talk to wee kids about their online activities and what they do in YouTube, and I just a wee while ago I remember talking to a class, and one boy had an origami channel. He was 10, but he had 30 origami videos in his YouTube channel, and he was producing that, and other children were in somebody was in a scooter club, and they collectively had a group for producing videos. And it's really interesting to see that that's something mm-hmm. getting taken up at academic level at a university. That's quite exciting. Some of this kind of links into something you said, Martin, earlier, and I think Natalie, I caught in a tweet from you about, you know, the only stipulation you had for assessing people's work in a particular way was if it was an open, on the open web as a link.
Mm.
And I think you were kind of saying about using WordPress and making things public, and I'd be interested in that, because certainly primary school, again, with 10-year-olds, I found it very useful for those people to be publishing on the open web because of the audience factor, really, and the goodness they get from that. And I'd be interested in you to see the medical school.
I think it's also about who owns the learning, and I think, you know, if it's an institutional portfolio, can you take it when you go? Can you show it to a prospective employer? You know, we heard in some of the sessions today about, you know, staff, students find the VLEs kind of clunky. They're using other social tools every day. They're more intuitive. You know, they can make mashups. They can, you know, if they make a YouTube video, they can easily embed it. And I think it is that whole kind of discourse that can happen in the sort of, I'd say the wild, but, you know, in the open. And there's a lot of emphasis these days about we've got to develop our learners to be lifelong learners, and I think it's a bit of debate as to whether our students have those skills to be lifelong learners. They kind of want to be spoon-fed, they're very assessment-focused. And I think by using things like blogs, maybe to keep a record of your learning, or to reflect, or to share something that you've created, or to curate even things that you've found that support your own learning, it's the fact that these, you know, blogs have a social element and you can amplify via Twitter, etc. It's then building up those connections and the network. And I think, to me, certainly from as a professional and looking at my own lifelong learning, that's really what keeps me up to date. And there's a sense, sometimes I look at students in medicine in particular and think, I look at the postgraduate arena and see all these doctors tweeting, sharing things, and the undergraduates don't necessarily get it. And they still, you know, think, why would, because we use Twitter for teachers, like, why would you want to use it? It's a social platform. And there's also a sense in actually which using these kinds of tools also helps to kind of role model professionalism, I think.
Okay.
And, you know, I've also seen some students who blog, you know, connect with academics elsewhere. You know, there has been serendipitous learning, but also opportunities then to present at a conference or whatever, and, you know, and also, you know, get the opportunity maybe to get a job or organise electives and things. So I think it's something which has a lot of advantages but isn't necessarily considered, because we're stuck in this walled garden using tools that no one's ever going to use again once they've graduated or when they've left school, you know.
I think it's a really interesting one, because I think appropriateness of using, see, things like Facebook and is a skill that I think needs to be taught as part of university, about what's appropriate to post and how to actually use tools like Twitter for your advantage for your lifelong learning and career. And I think it does take almost a different hat to think about these things, to think about not just following your latest celebrity, but actually to think about how to create a personal network, to create people that you want to follow, that really inspire you, that share interesting articles and that keep you up to date, is a kind of different way of thinking.
I suppose maybe that somebody of my age has come into things like, you know, using a blog and things from a professional point of view, and haven't, you know, they weren't there when I was young, so I see them as quite different. But I presume students see it more like you're saying, it's a private thing, it's a thing for fun and amusement and, you know, embarrassing instance, and that mesh is quite tricky.
Yeah, I have. For me, it's changed my career. The fact that I started blogging, and there was these opportunities to share things to a global audience. That, thinking back at my own education, it just wasn't there. You know, we're essentially now, with things like social networking sites, we're leaving constant footprints. So I think that worries me slightly, that we are leaving all these footprints around. And it amused me recently to see someone had written a blog post about internet security where they used me as a focus of how easy it was to find all my profile information just from my avatar that I used on every site.
Yeah.
That tickled me somewhat. So there is implications of, you know, these footprints, but I think it is part of our responsibility to educate people that you are doing this, that there are benefits of it, but you know there are dangers. But it's completely revolutionised my own career, and I think there's a lot of opportunity within education in general to really embrace this distributed. There is natural capacity within the internet now to do so much more in terms of being able to learn and share and connect, that I think a lot of institutions really aren't tapping into yet.
Yeah, it's very rare that you could connect, say, with a specialist in Japan or the States or and hear their research or hear what they've been finding out before the capabilities of the internet. You'd have to try pretty hard to be connected to their network, but these days it's a lot easier, and it's just to make the most of those opportunities, as you're saying.
Yeah, so I think we're actually slipping into keynote time now. So we'll have to wrap up, and I would just say that's great, and I'm example of sitting here as a result of having a podcast, getting to talk to really interesting people all day, and it doesn't cost anything. So I'd highly recommend the social media rule. Folks, can I just say thanks very much? This will be online sometime as soon as I've talked and tailed it. It was great to talk to you, and I think we could have probably gone on for a lot longer, but the keynote is calling. And if you're listening, hopefully we'll have this and other stuff online soon at edutalk.cc. Cheers.